My main metric is how well am I connecting with my curiosity? That was the thing that, like, my very first day on my own, more than 10 years ago, I woke up in my bedroom in San Francisco, and I'm thinking, like, oh gosh, I have like a whole day ahead of me. How am I going to fill it up with something that's not Guitar Hero? So it was in that moment I decided, you know, I thought back to what it was like to be a kid where you're like losing track of time doing something because you just love doing it so much. And so I just wanted to fill up as much of my day with that as possible. And now 10 years later, I'm getting more and more of that.
Hello, hackers. Thanks a lot for joining us for another episode of the Hacking UI podcast, where we hack our way through product design, development, and creative entrepreneurship. I'm David Tintner.
And I'm Sagi Schreiber. This will be the 9th episode of the 3rd season of the Hacking UI podcast that we call Scaling a Career. In this season, we have 10 amazing guests for you that are leaders and influencers from a variety of different backgrounds. For this season, we are thrilled to have 2 amazing sponsors with incredibly useful products for you, Envision and FreshBooks. So I bet you all know Envision. So today I want to talk to you about designbetter.co. The education team over at Envision created an amazing source of quality learning material for product designers. They interviewed dozens of leading designers and companies like Google, Airbnb, Netflix, Facebook, Slack, and more. And basically they did that in order to discover the design practices that they use in order to help everyone, their audience, which is us, transform our design process and push our organizations to the limits. So don't forget to hit designbetter.co. It's an amazing resource. They have 4 books that they published. They have an amazing podcast of their own. Be sure to subscribe to it. And they have workshops for designers, so you can check those out as well. So I really recommend it. It's just amazing.
FreshBooks is the perfect accounting software for freelance designers and developers or creative entrepreneurs with a small business. FreshBooks is built from the ground up to work for people like us, let's say non-accountants. They have some really powerful features like integration with Stripe, expense tracking, and a customer support team that actually picks up the phone and works with you to find the perfect solution. Actually, my favorite part about FreshBooks is the super smart notifications they send, which show you the highest priority task you can do right now in order to improve your business. Again, if you're an experienced accountant and you're looking for the all-powerful analytical monster of a tool, okay, this is not it. But if you're like us and you're just looking to get some understanding of your business and keep track of things without wasting hours of your time, then this is exactly what you need. If you want to see what it's all about, FreshBooks gives you a 30-day free trial and doesn't even require a credit card to log in.
Okay, so on to our episode today. This episode is different than any other episode we've done so far because besides being recorded for audio, this was also transmitted as a Facebook Live interview to a closed Facebook group of creative entrepreneurs called Mindful and Ruthless, where I, Sagi, personally interview experts about building, you know, personal brands, online businesses, passive revenue streams, like we did here with Hacking UI. So if you'd like to join, you can just pause this for a sec right now, open Facebook, type in Mindful and Ruthless in the search bar, and join. We'll also have the link here in the show notes. So, all right, on to the actual guest today. Our guest today is a Silicon Valley designer turned Colombia-based writer and best-selling author. This episode is not for those who think whether they should start writing and putting themselves out there, but to those who actually made that decision. Whether you already have a blog or write every once in a while, we all have a lot to learn from our guest here, who is not only a successful writer on Medium, but also wrote 2 books, one which became a bestseller, rated top 20 on Amazon. Ladies and gents, it's our pleasure to present to you the one and only David Kadavy. Let's get hacking! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the first expert interview on Mindful and Ruthless. And also, this is an episode for the Hacking UI podcast that we're recording both at the same time. And David Kadavy is on here with me. David, such a pleasure to have you, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Sagi, it is great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so David, to those of you that don't know, well, he's a best-selling author. He is a designer. Also, like, we have such a similar story. It's like, well, I'm not a best-selling author, but I was a designer. And he's like,
yeah,
designer turned entrepreneur. He's one of the, like, I think, I don't know if top publishers on Medium, but certainly, like, one of the most, like, noticeable entrepreneurs that write on Medium. And also, you have an amazing podcast, which you interviewed so many amazing people. How many episodes do you have right now on the podcast?
I'm wrapping up. I'm around 125 or so. Yeah, we've interviewed, first episode was Jason Fried. We've interviewed Seth Godin, Steve Case, the former CEO of AOL. That was really amazing. James Altucher. So many people. It's been such a pleasure to be able to actually interview my heroes on that show. So it's been really enjoyable.
That's amazing. And the podcast, by the way, to all of you that don't know yet, it's called Love Your Work. And we'll link to it. Oh, nice. You got the tee. So anybody here in the Facebook Live can see the t-shirt in the podcast.
I got the hat too, but it's one of a kind.
Nice. So it's an amazing podcast. And also right now you just released your new book. Right? It's like a short book on how to write a book.
Right. Yeah. So I've been doing some short, I guess I did one short read publishing experiment. I've got another one coming up. And this one was called How to Write a Book. But it follows up another book that I wrote called The Heart to Start that came out in December. And I just kind of like got the self-publishing bug and decided to rethink what books are. Like, not like I'm the first person to do that, but I think I had held on to, especially after having success with Design for Hackers, which debuted in the top 20 on all of Amazon, it's a traditionally published book. After that success, I think I really held on to this idea that, oh, every time you have to write a book, it's got to be like this huge deal. When there's actually plenty of things to be written about that aren't necessarily a huge deal, but that are useful for people. Yeah. And that our ideas of books are changing. So one of those books then was How to Write a Book. So I just wrote 7,000 words. It was intended to be a blog post. It actually is a blog post. People can find it for free, but it's also available on Kindle. It's available on paperback. It's available on Audible. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I hope to do more of these shorter book publishing experiments.
That's awesome. And like, first of all, that's how you got here on the podcast, by the way, and on this live Facebook interview, because to those of you who don't know, like, so I already told you I follow you for a while, and like I got your email like about this book launch, about how to write a book, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe like I didn't have David Kadavy on the Hacking UI podcast yet, and right now I'm starting to do these Facebook live interviews here and the Facebook group of Mindful and Ruthless. Why don't I just like, hey, this is a great opportunity. So like, I have no book out yet, but I would love to talk to you about that. But first, how about you give a bit of background, just like really quick, to kind of like fill us all in, like how you came to be from a designer to an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so you should definitely write a book, by the way. I mean, we should give you a challenge. I actually just gave a friend a challenge yesterday to write a book in a day, and he did it. It's published, it's up. Manish Sethi just, of Pavlok, just put up a book. So anyway, how did I end up doing the things that I'm doing? I'm somebody who, I think like a lot of your listeners who are visual people, always loved art, ended up becoming a designer because I wanted to make a living doing art. That's the way I thought of it anyway. And then I stumbled into web design, ended up being a designer for startups in Silicon Valley. And then I ended up writing this book, Design for Hackers, which basically breaks down design into a framework level understanding. Like, it's kind of frustrating that if you code something, there's a manual that you can refer to. You get error messages that you can put into Stack Overflow, and you can get a stack trace and figure out what's wrong with your code. But when it comes to design, you can't really do that. So that's what I try to do with Design for Hackers. And ever since I started blogging maybe 14 years ago, I've really just wanted to learn things and then teach what I'm learning along the way. So, you know, I still design things mostly for my own business, but I don't actually work as a designer anymore. And so now I'm doing more and more writing. So figured out how to write a book, and now I'm sharing how to write a book. Just wrote The Heart to Start, in part because personally have struggled so much with my own creative resistance, with my own emotional barriers to actually making stuff happen. And that's something that I discovered in the process of writing Design for Hackers too, was that a lot of people, they might have read the whole book, they might know everything that's in the book, but it's really, this is a problem across so many things. It's really not so much the knowledge, it's this emotional barrier that they put up, these mental barriers that they put up in front of themselves with creative work that prevent them from actually making that stuff happen. So that's when I started getting more interested in creative productivity. Also in part because writing that book was such a painful experience for me, because, you know, I had certainly experienced creative resistance as a designer, but I'd gotten pretty good at it, so I could get past it. But then when it came time to write a book, You know, I was locked in my apartment for 6 months of the worst Chicago winter in history, banging my head against the wall 12 hours a day just to try to get like, you know, 15 minutes of good writing. And I kind of, the dust settled and I was like, what's that? How do I figure out how to make that kind of happen on command? So that's a thing that I've been interested in over the last several years. And that's nice. Part of why I wrote How to Write a Book. That's part of why I wrote The Heart to Start.
Oh man, so I'm totally like in this like kind of stage where I'm thinking about writing a book, and I already started. And you said you gave your friend a challenge, a book in a day. So I gave myself a challenge, a book in a day.
Oh, you gave yourself a challenge, a book in a day?
I actually did, and I did it over, like I said, if I'm going to commit, I'm going to commit publicly. So I committed publicly to doing it in a conference. And then I went to a conference, locked myself inside a glass, square, and sat down and just wrote for an entire day during the conference while everybody was walking around me, like, you know, networking and stuff. And I was just like there in there, like writing. I managed to get 3 chapters done, about like 40 pages. But besides that, I just, you know, I stopped that day and I didn't continue that yet. So I'm looking forward to continuing.
I mean, I think that there's a great opportunity to rethink what books are. So like this How to Write a Book is 7,000 words. I've got another one I'm probably going to put out pretty soon here. It's 4,000 or 5,000 words. And just at least to get a feel for it, because there's so much to learn in self-publishing, for just getting it out, for just figuring out how to get people to buy your book, or to get it in front of people that you're going to even come up with an idea of a book that people want to buy, that I would encourage people, if you're an aspiring author and you are okay with self-publishing, and if you aren't okay with self-publishing, you should probably rethink that. I don't know. We can talk about that. But to just go on KDP, go on Amazon KDP, and take a 500 word blog post you've written or something, publish it under another name. Just go through the process. Then, you know, delete it a few days later if you want. And I understand some people might have a reaction like, oh, but you're just going to put crap into the ecosystem. Don't worry. Amazon can help the good stuff rise to the top and the bad stuff not get out there. And like I said, you can also delete the book. It's also under a different name. I did this myself just to figure out how to do the KDP thing. There's so much to learn. And once you go through that process, then that helps reduce some of that creative resistance of, you know, working on a book for years or putting it off or something, and, you know, start short. Seth Godin really helped me with this. I was talking to him. We were on Skype, on video, kind of like we are right now. Yeah. And he had this bookshelf behind him, as he always does. And he motions the bookshelf and he says, look, all these books here. Like, if they're all bestsellers, if the publishers knew which ones were going to be bestsellers, they would just go to the people who are bestsellers and they would publish those. So if I were somebody who were trying to publish, I would go ahead and just do a book a week. I'd concentrate on Kindle and you'd learn over time what works, what doesn't work. There's all these little subtle things that I can tell you from having done a traditionally published book and now I'm doing this self-published book, that there's these things about marketing a self-published book that you can do that is very difficult to do with a traditionally published book, and that traditional publishers don't even really know how to do that well.
Yeah.
And you're going to be the head of marketing of your book anyway, as Seth told me. So, you know, you just got to get stuff out there. And I think that it's very easy to worry that, it's like career suicide if I write a short book. I mean, it should still be good. Like, I think my short reads are good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something that you can keep doing. You can keep learning. You could do it under another name if you want, because that's a very common thing. There's a lot of authors with pen names and such. Yeah. So that's a good way to get past that creative resistance. So that's something you might want to try. Just like go through the process of getting it on KDP.
I think, first of all, this is a very interesting perspective, because everybody thinks like, you know, I have to write a book and then like put it in Amazon. And you're like, hey, like, you know, experience just writing for a start. And also in your book, I love that how you talk about like basically like splitting it into days. Just like try to write, you know, 100 words a day, 250 words a day, whatever you can. Just like, but even lower than you actually expect of yourself. Just like do it to actually form it as a habit. And you talked about your talk with Nir Eyal about this. And anyways, I just put a link to this book because it's just like worth it. But I think that it's an interesting perspective to say, hey, you know, you experiment with writing. Why don't you also experiment with just going on Amazon and just like, you know, publishing, even not under your own name, but just like publishing, just like experience how is it to like upload something to the actual Amazon, you know, to the actual Amazon front? And that's an interesting perspective, because once you probably do that, you get some kind of feeling of like, whoa, I just, you know, whoa, I did that for like 500 words. Why don't I do that now for a bigger kind of like context? So it's
the same thing. And this is actually this brings up an interesting point that is important about rethinking books, which is Joanna Pan, who's a great advocate of indie publishing, as she would call it. She doesn't like to call it self-publishing. She talked about this on my podcast when I interviewed her, was that books used to have to be a certain thickness. You know, publishers wanted books to be a certain thickness because they would stand out on the shelf and you could see it on the shelf. That made me think, well, that's interesting, because my book that's 7,000 words has the same thing that War and Peace does. It has an Amazon page. People can find it through search. It has the same size cover on it. It has a URL, you know. It has all these things that War and Peace also has. I mean, my book is not War and Peace. I haven't read that book yet, but I'm sure it's very good because it's stood the test of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of rethinking books is rethinking, okay, well, what is a book now? A lot of our ideas of what a book is are established by old economics, by these big five publishers or whatever in New York who, let's look at some of the things that go on there, okay? You have to print a certain number of books to even get the book out there. Yeah. So there's certain economics there. It's got to be a certain thickness. The per unit cost needs to be worth it. So it has to be a certain thickness. So what do you get? You get a blog post with a bunch of filler to make it 250 pages. I mean, I know everybody who's watching this, listening to this, has experienced that. They're excited about this business book. They buy it. And you're like, this didn't have to be a book. It was why is it so long? Why do I have to sort through all this junk just to get to the idea? Yeah. And a lot of that is due to old ideas of what a book is, and they're kind of holding on to that still. Yeah. So self-publishing, you can completely rethink what is a book, you know? So the top New York Times bestselling books over, I think, the last 7 years or something, the length has dropped like 40%.
Yeah.
You know, people don't have time to read a big, long book and slog through all this stuff. You know, they want...
That's the one voice.
Most people want something they can finish. And it feels good to finish a book. So that's one of the best compliments I've had about The Heart to Start with. Somebody said, you know, this is one of the first books I've finished in a long time.
Nice.
That I've finished.
Nice. And I want to just like kind of take you back, even like let's strip it down to the most basic. People that are hearing and watching this, which are like, didn't even write a blog post, you know, that really want to start writing, really want to start like putting their name out there. And I'm not even talking right now about the people listening to this or hearing this that say, that are kind of like, you know, watching this and saying, you know, I don't want to write. I don't want to put out myself. I'm an introvert. We're past that right now with this specific interview. But I'm talking about the people that really want to put their name out there and are kind of like, they don't know how to kind of like start. So I know, first of all, you suggest Medium as a great way to start, right?
Yeah, I think Medium is a great way to start. And believe me, I know exactly how those people feel. This is why I wrote The Heart to Start. This is the thing that I have learned myself, is the thing that I am trying to solidify in myself, is to not get into these mental distortions that prevent you from ever starting. So one of those is this idea that you're going to create this grand blog and you're looking at somebody who's this great blogger and you're thinking, oh gosh, it's just going to take me so long to get to that level. But you don't realize like it happens day after day after day, you know, bit by bit by bit. Look at Seth Godin's blog, for example. I mean, it's nothing fancy. It's like a typepad blog, but it's amazing stuff. And this is something that I got over myself in 2004, was I remember reading Douglas Bowman's blog, you know, the designer from Twitter and Google. He wasn't at those companies at the time. Yeah. They didn't exist, or Google did, I guess. But I remember admiring those blogs and looking at the blog layouts and everything. And I was pretty new to web design. I'm like, how am I ever going to do that? And so I went, eventually one night I went on Blogger and I just wrote one stream of consciousness post. Like, I'm not sure why I'm doing this, but I'm just going to barf this out. I'm seriously talking about exactly what's going on. And it was on Blogger. You can still find that today on my WordPress blog. That's at catavy.net. Yeah. My first blog post is still there. So I think getting that action to happen, that first action, is so important. And as you said, I think Medium is a really great place to do it, because it really takes, you know, like transferring that to a blog, I'm not sure yet how that works on Medium, but whatever. I don't personally worry about that. I do a lot of writing on Medium. Yeah. I still have Cadavy.net. Medium is my little thought experimentation place. And it's a great place because a good idea can spread there. It can spread quite easily. I've had posts that I've written where I was kind of like, I'm like really divulging a lot here. I kind of don't want somebody to see this. So I'm not going to do anything to promote it. And then it had like 75,000 views, you know? Which is one of my most successful posts ever, just through the organic network. And then you also get highlights, which are extremely valuable because you get to see what people highlight, what really resonates with them. And then you can start calibrating your writing accordingly to that. So I do think that, one, getting started with it, and then as you were talking about having some kind of a very, very, very easy habit, it's more important to keep the habit of writing than the size of the habit. You know, so many times I tried to start doing like 1,000-word-a-day habit. Yeah, I got by a couple days, but then what happens? Eventually you're able to easily make an excuse for yourself. But if it's 100 words, then I don't know about you, but my self-perception is like, if I can't write 100 words, like, I'm really a loser. I have no excuse. So, you know, it might be 50 words for some people, or 20 or 250, but having some sort of minimum word count like that and just getting the habit, you know, give yourself the weekend off if you need to. Having the tiny habit is very important. You know, BJ Fogg, the Stanford professor, behavioral scientist, was on my podcast recently talking about tiny habits and this program that he has and what he's learned about how it's so important to have those habits be so small that you can't possibly make an excuse to not do it. I think that's a great way to get started writing.
All right, so let's take a short break to talk about our sponsors, Envision and FreshBooks. So I bet you all know Envision and love Envision, but today I want to talk to you about designbetter.co. The education team over at Envision created this amazing resource of quality learning material for product designers. They interviewed dozens of leading designers at companies like Google, Airbnb, Netflix, Facebook, Slack, and more, basically to discover their design practices in order to help us learn from that and implement that into our organization. So first of all, they have a podcast that you really need to subscribe to. It's a great podcast. And also they have 4 books they put together. So you better head over to designbetter.co and check those out. Also, you can check out one-of-a-kind workshops for designers.
FreshBooks is the perfect accounting software for freelance designers and developers or creative entrepreneurs with a small business. FreshBooks is built from the ground up to work for people like us, let's say non-accountants. They have some really powerful features like integration with Stripe, expense tracking, and a customer support team that actually picks up the phone and works with you to find the perfect solution. Actually, my favorite part about FreshBooks is the super smart notifications they send, which show you the highest priority task you can do right now in order to improve your business. Again, if you're an experienced accountant and you're looking for the all-powerful analytical monster of a tool, okay, this is not it. But if you're like us and you're just looking to get some understanding of your business and keep track of things without wasting hours of your time, then this is exactly what you need. If you want to see what it's all about, FreshBooks gives you a 30-day free trial and doesn't even require a credit card to log in.
You know, the thing is that I personally tried having like a daily writing habit. But then, you know, we try as entrepreneurs, as creatives, to have so many habits in our like daily lives. I try to meditate every day. I try to like write down my goals every day. I try to sit down and create intentions for the day. And it's kind of like now I'm adding this on top and I already have a day full of, you know, packed with stuff.
With habits.
Yeah, right? With habits and also stuff that need to get done. And also I'm saying to myself, if I write 100 words, why don't I just like, if I do that every day, let's say I spend half an hour writing every day or even like 1 hour, why don't I just have one day where I put like, I don't know, like 3-4 hours of jet writing and block it out on my calendar? What do you think about that? Is like, what's your take on that?
I think I've heard some people for whom that works. Yeah. That does not work for me. I mean, I will have days where I do put out a lot more words than other days. Mm-hmm. But for me, and I think this is true for a lot of people, the more days that I string in a row, writing hurts.
Yeah.
Writing hurts at first. Like, and the more days that I string in a row, the more it suddenly just stops hurting. And then the more suddenly there will just be one day where all of a sudden I can write. You know, I might have written garbage for a long time, but all of a sudden I can write. And the more days I string together, the better that gets.
Yeah.
So I think that is a good way to do things.
Okay.
I think a misconception that a lot of people have about writing, or a thing that I wish I would have known about writing, was that I so long would maybe walk around with an idea in my head and think about how I'm going to write it. And then when I'd sit down to try to write it, it would just really hurt. And it's really hard to write about that idea.
Yeah.
But when I gave myself permission to cut that idea up into small things, so, okay, maybe write 200 words about this part of the idea today.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow I write 200 words about this part of the idea. And I allow them to overlap. Suddenly there becomes this universe in your mind about this idea, about this concept. And this is kind of what happened with me with design, or with Design for Hackers, was I designed so much that I started to have this framework understanding of this thing. It can be any concept. And then it becomes easy to, I mean, it wasn't easy for me to write at that time because I wasn't doing enough of the writing of it. But when you really attack a concept from every single angle over and over again, day after day, suddenly it becomes easy, because it's very easy to write stuff that you already know.
Yeah.
But it's also much easier to know things once you've written about them. You know, to write words worth reading, you have to think thoughts that are worth reading.
Yeah.
And so the easiest way to do that is to keep writing. Hemingway would talk about this concept of the iceberg, the idea that the grace of an iceberg, the way that it moves, its solidity, its grace, comes from the fact that 90% of it is underwater. So when he's writing The Old Man and the Sea, you know, he's lived in the fishing town. He's been a fisherman before. He's done all these things. He's not writing about all those things. Those are the parts of the iceberg that help make it solid, make the things that he does write have that confidence and that clarity, mm-hmm. because he knows so much of it.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things I wish I knew about writing, which was that I think for a lot of writers, especially for myself, what you see me write is kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch other stuff back there holding it in place.
Nice. And just to kind of like, let's talk about your writing and what you do in general. So how does your business look like these days in terms of like structure? You write right now, you have your books, you have the books that already exist, Design for Hackers, you have your podcast activity, right? Do you have sponsors there? Like how is it laid out?
Sure. So I really kind of pivoted a couple of years ago. I decided that I really wanted to double down on this writing thing and the podcast and stuff, which is part of the reason why I moved to Columbia. I really intentionally knew like that my income was going to be lower.
Yeah.
I'm starting to report my income over on Cadavy.net as well. And it's starting to pick up a little bit better.
Cool.
So, but for, you know, a couple of years there, it was just trying to get myself to be better and better at writing.
Yeah.
And so I was concentrating a lot on that. So there is the podcast. I do have some Patreon supporters, which help cover the production costs of the podcast, because I do have a production team for that podcast. I do have sponsors on the podcast. I don't really, haven't been filling all of the inventory, but it's been, I've had very good luck. I've had Skillshare and Casper, and I've had FreshBooks. I've had a lot of great sponsors in the podcast.
Yeah.
What else? I still have courses, Design for Hackers courses. So I've got D4H Video, which is kind of like the video version of the Design for Hackers book with a community to go along with it. I do hangout, office hour hangouts, where I work with my students kind of one-on-one or in a small group every month. I have a course called White Hot Course, which is entirely about white space, believe it or not.
Nice.
I love that course. It was so much fun. The sort of flagship part of that course is the talk. It's a South by Southwest talk that I did. I hired a camera crew to come to South by Southwest while I did this talk.
Nice.
about white space. I did a whole talk all about nothing. So let's see. There's the podcasts, the courses, and then I'm starting to really do a lot of the books. And then there's also some affiliate income as well. I had set up a lot of passive revenue streams that enabled me to concentrate more on Design for Hackers, because, you know, first-time author advances are not that huge. Let's be serious. So I had some passive revenue stuff set up before, and that was kind of my model, was set up passive, do a little bit of freelancing, set up passive revenue with the rest of the time. Once the passive revenue started going, then start exploring further things. That's what made Design for Hackers possible. So now I'm starting to rebuild some other passive revenue streams. I'm doing some very detailed reviews of different email marketing platforms, such as ActiveCampaign and AWeber and ConvertKit and stuff. And so I'm starting to crank out some of those, and those are setting up kind of passive monthly revenue that then also free me up. There's some synergies there. One, I do email marketing, and so it enables me to learn about these different platforms and sharpen that. But then it also creates that passive income that allows me to free myself up creatively to explore the things that interest me, which has really always been my mission. But it's the thing that I really decided to double down on a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So that's the basic structure of things. You know, I'm not a multimillionaire. The thing that is important to me is following my curiosity and learning about things and then teaching what I learned along the way and hopefully enabling some other people to do that as well. So that's where I'm at. Oh, by the way, one other thing that I think is very interesting that is that I've also been earning money not only on Medium's partner program, which is basically you publish things and then Medium pays you for the claps that you get, but also a blockchain site called Steemit, which is publish blog posts and you receive cryptocurrency. And then you can cash that cryptocurrency on into Bitcoin and then on into US dollars. So I made several thousand dollars in 2017 with that. I've made a couple thousand dollars so far in 2018. People can see that on my income reports.
Nice.
But that's a really exciting new avenue or new revenue stream. This cryptocurrency-backed social media stuff is super, super exciting. It's actually what my next short read is about, is how to actually go through that process of posting things and getting the cryptocurrency and then turning it into US dollars or whatever your currency of choice is.
Or just leaving the cryptocurrency because right now it's like, you know, set some aside.
I mean, and I do. And that's part of the way that Steemit works. I won't get into the complexities here, but you're incentivized to hold on to it, which is part of what gives it value in the market.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So basically right now you sell a lot of passive revenue streams that allow you to just like live in Colombia where it's, you know, cheaper living, right? And just like also being kind of like an environment that you told me once that like you told me that you love this like environment that you're learning Spanish and like salsa dancing, right? it's like enjoying the environment. So it's great that you're doing this and basically you can focus on writing. So living the life, right?
Yeah, look, I mean, my main metric is how well am I connecting with my curiosity?
Yeah.
That was the thing that, like, my very first day on my own, more than 10 years ago, I woke up in my bedroom in San Francisco and, like, am in bed and I'm thinking, like, oh, gosh, I have, like, a whole day ahead of me. How am I going to fill it up with something that's not Guitar Hero? So that was in that moment I decided, you know, I thought back to what it was like to be a kid where you're like losing track of time doing something because you just love doing it so much.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to fill up as much of my day with that as possible.
Yes.
And now 10 years later, I'm getting more and more of that where, I mean, there was just a Sunday afternoon recently where I was like, all right, yeah, I should relax today. And like everything I could think of that was going to be relaxing to me was also in some way work, which is a little perverse. I'm not sure how to feel about that, but it's a good problem to have.
We all have it. Yeah. I mean, like when you love what you do, great, your podcast is Love Your Work. So when you love what you do, it's something that first makes you happy and fulfilled. Two, create success because you do it well because you love it. Three, basically most of these things help other people out. I mean, like, so in general, I think it's a great thing that what you're doing. And also the feeling that connecting to yourself as a kid is something that I talk about a lot, about like connecting to that 8-year-old feeling when, you know, like, so it's something that also my coach Calvin Wayman, he talks about. And by the way, my coach Calvin Wayman, who's also on this group, he self-published his book Fish Out of Water, which kind of like changed my life, because afterwards
cool.
I reached out to him and got him, hired him as my coach. And so it's,
yeah, I mean, I was very inspired by Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week.
Totally.
And I think that a lot of people take the message of the 4-Hour Work Week as like, oh, just put a set of passive stuff so that way you kind of don't have to do anything. But I mean, I think that's not the true message of the book, or at least like what I go for is let's figure out how to set up the passive stuff so I can figure out how to make things that are closer and closer to my core and that, you know, do something to help people. And it's just a long bootstrapping process to get to there of finding that overlap in the Venn diagram between what you love to do and what you can make money doing. And then I think that kind of naturally is going to help and impact other people because you are attacking the problems that you experience or the challenges that you experience, and other people are naturally going to have those things as well. So, I mean, that's part of the philosophy is trying to do something that is meaningful to me, to love my work.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like, oh, follow your passion type of thing, because, you know, it's uncomfortable sometimes to do something and to try to do it really well. Yeah. But you have to find something, or at least I think, that's a lot easier to do when you do love the thing and when you love the process in a way that you can actually enjoy some of the discomfort that's inherent in making something.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going for.
It's totally like, I think that, you know, you have reached success, like top 20 on Amazon and an amazing podcast with like such amazing guests. So I guess like, you know, it's working. The formula is working. So everybody, if you're hearing this right now, just like, you know, again, it's a great takeaway. Just try to connect to your kid self and do what you really are, like what you can fill your day with. So totally.
It's really hard to fill up your whole day that way. But I think even if you can find like a, you know, 1 hour window once a week, yeah, a 15 minute window once a day or something, I think those things feel like a crack on the sidewalk. If you just can make the commitment to try to reconnect with that feeling for a certain amount of time at some particular interval, and it's just this really easy goal that you can say, you can drop everything and just try to do that one goal at that whatever interval, you know, regardless of all the amazing things that are going on in your life and how busy you are, eventually it starts to grow. Eventually you start to find the time to do more and more of that. Yeah. If you give yourself a chance to reconnect with that feeling, I believe.
Totally. I think that also it's a great point, because a lot of people have businesses, they have their, I don't know, even if not businesses, they have their like full-time job and they have a family and they have so many like, you know, commitments that they're like, oh, you know, yeah, what, like, you know, I know it, like I like music, but I'm not going to get into it right now. But totally, yeah, you should start with like incremental stuff, like think about like 1 hour a week. That's a good It's a good thing to have. I had a period where I had like 1.5 hours on Hacking UI, which was my side project, and 1.5 hour a week. And we published every 2 months one article, but that article was killer. And that kind of like what started me doing more of that. And then we eventually took Fridays to work on it. And one day we left our day jobs, you know, to do Hacking
UI. Yeah, it's very cool. And, you know, I think priorities are important. You have other things going on in your life, but you have to make the choice what things are important, and that can result in you not doing some things that you might want to do because there's some other thing that you want to do but have a better chance of succeeding at sometimes. I mean, as unsexy as that sounds, you know, it's like, I like to play guitar, but I've been doing it for 19 years and I'm still not very good at it. Like, my chances of really making it as a musician are pretty low. My chances of making it as a writer are better. So I very rarely play guitar. Maybe at some point I'll just be so wealthy that I'll decide, like, you know, I'm going to carve out some time to like really figure out this guitar thing, or really figure out how to finally learn how to dance tango, even though I've taken so many lessons and I just can't do it right. You know, there are those decisions to be made. I'm reminded of a story from Malcolm Gladwell, who said that, you know, when he was junior high or something, he was very talented at track and made the conscious decision like, oh, you can't do both these things. Or George O'Keefe, who is this, you know, one of the most amazing artists from the 20th century. When she was in art school, she posed for a portrait, and then that portrait won this great art award. And it was, she had to think like, well, I mean, I apparently have a prize winning face. I can be in more portraits, but it's going to take away from my time being an artist. So she consciously wrote down like, okay, I can do this or I can do that, with like two columns on this, on a sheet, and decided like, I'm not going to pose for portraits anymore. Yeah. And she ended up being one of the most influential artists of the 20th century. So, I mean, there might be things that you enjoy that you just have to decide, like, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's about priorities sometimes.
It's totally about priorities. And I think that what you should do is just go with your, again, gut feeling, and also be mindful of what you can and can't do. And that's exactly why this group is called Mindful and Ruthless. Because you have to be mindful of what you do, but also be ruthless with your gut feeling and go for it. All right, I just want to take a short break before we close off this episode. If you've listened all the way here and enjoyed this episode, I would love to invite you to join Mindful and Ruthless. It's a Facebook group where I'm happy to announce I'll be launching a series of these kind of interviews on Facebook Lives once a week. And also, this will also be my new podcast. So if you're a creative entrepreneur and you're interested in online marketing, building a personal brand and an online business, generating passive income, and building an online presence in general, then I think you'll feel right at home and would love the group. You would love the podcast. You would love these Facebook lives. And also, I go live there in the Facebook group sharing my own journey. If you're interested, if you loved Hacking Your Eye, the podcast, if you loved our blog, our newsletter, I, Sagi Schreiber, would love to invite you to this Facebook group. What you can do right now is just hit pause for 1 second, stop where you are in the middle of the road. No, I'm just kidding. If you're driving, don't do that. But if you can, just like hit pause for a second, you know, just open Facebook, type Mindful and Ruthless in the search bar, and, you know, and just join. I would love to have everyone here that follow me this far with the Hacking Your Eye podcast in the group. So again, Mindful and Ruthless on Facebook. And this is for creative entrepreneurs and people that want to do stuff like Hacking UI, like we built this blog that, you know, eventually led us to leaving our day jobs. So let's get back to the episode.
I like that. I like that a lot, you know, because it does remind me of one of the things that I remember one of my podcast guests saying. It was Wheezy Waiter. He's this famous YouTuber, just like sits and makes jokes in front of a video. That's what it looks like anyway. But I was like, what kind of sacrifices have you had to make? And he's like, well, you know, there's a certain point where my friends were going out to bars all the time, and I just started seeing them a lot less because I didn't go out with them anymore. I mean, that might sound sad to some people, but I'm sure he still has friends. I think back to like my 20s. One of the skills I wish I would have learned sooner was the art of staying in, the art of saying, you know, oh, you want to go out? Like, oh, I actually have plans already. My plan is to stay at home and work on something. Like, there's something I never did was there's this default to, you want to default to doing something. Yeah. Like you're out, you're doing something. Maybe it's different for other people, but so sometimes you have to make that sort of feeling a little ruthless decision where you have certain things in your life that you have to cut out or cut short. I mean, how many times have you been at a party or at dinner where like you had a great time, but now the conversation just keeps dragging on and dragging on, and you don't want to be like, you're afraid that you're going to be rude if you just like leave. You know, if you say, okay, I got to go home now because I'm going to go read or I'm going to go work on this thing. You know, you can have both. You can still go out to dinner. It's just, you know, cut it off when you reach the point of diminishing returns.
Totally. Just like, you know, and it goes exactly also to people that want a raise in their job. You know, they're like, you know, I'm not going to ask for a raise because, you know, I just like, I don't feel comfortable with going out to my boss and asking for a raise. But again, if they are like, if someone's like mindful about, okay, like I deserve a raise and I'm self-aware, and then he's ruthless and saying, no, I'm going to have that tough conversation right now with my boss, then they'll probably get a raise if they deserve it. So just, it's the same thing.
If you're able to make the case, and you know, do your research and think about it, then you reach a point where you're like, I need to get a raise. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to feel at peace at this job. Yeah. Or I got to find a different job.
Yeah, man. So I know that we're very short on time. So we have just like a few minutes left for this interview. So
sure.
I have so much things I want to talk to you about. And I'm going to drop right now that I'm also releasing a course on, it's called Design Principles. And it's basically really similar to what you're saying about design for hackers. I released it here in Israel. It's called Design Fundamentals here in Israel. And it was a pretty successful launch of an online course where I teach the framework. I put together in the 10 years as a designer to create great design happen. And now I'm launching it for the audience of marketers in the US. So probably, first of all, we can have like amazing collaborations about that. But we'll talk about that offline.
Cool.
But anyways, so we have such an amazing similar story. It's just great. And I wanted to ask you one last question, which is like kind of like, which we'll try to keep it short, but then afterwards we have the lightning round, okay? So the last question. So the last question is this.
Athletic stance.
Yeah. So you interviewed a lot of amazing people, right? But which one was like the one that you were most excited about, or just like you remember the most? And what was like the takeaway that we can grab from that? And afterwards I'll link to that episode as well.
It's so hard to pick. I mean, we were just talking about Seth Godin. I think that is one that truly had a big impact on me.
Okay.
Because, and this was maybe just even a year ago, I realized how much I was really holding on to expectations that I had for myself, expectations that other people might have had for me, other expectations definitely that I imagined other people having for me. Yeah. And Seth really helped me break through that in our conversation. And that's the one time that I've talked to Seth, and it really did change things, and it really did set me on the course that I'm on now. And so I think that if there's anybody out there who is thinking about writing books and has been holding off for one reason or another, I think that one, episode 77, is the one that I would definitely recommend to listen to.
Done. So I'll link it below. Great. And so, all right, are you ready for the lightning round?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. So first of all, you know, for any creative just starting out, really, just like people that are just starting out to put themselves out there, what is your biggest tip?
Have some kind of project that is your own. Have some kind of playground that is all yours, where you can try anything you want and you can use it as a way to learn and as a way to motivate you to learn. If you have a blog and you want to redesign the template on it, then that's a great motivation to learn various things to make it happen. There's no better way.
Cool. Now, if you can name one podcast, blog, or book, which is not your own, that you can recommend to the listeners and people watching.
I have to say right now, it's a podcast. Okay. And this is going to make me sound so unoriginal, but I've been listening to Seth Godin's new podcast a lot. It's called Akimbo.
I actually didn't know he has a new podcast.
He has a new podcast, and epic. Nice. It's amazing. It's really talking about the importance of sort of wabi-sabi, of like the thing that only you can do, of in a way imperfection. What can humans do in this age where we have AI and automation bearing down upon us? It's a lot of what I've talked about that in The Hard to Start as well. And so he's just really hitting on a lot of ideas and going a lot deeper into certain things that I've thought about a little bit, but he's really adding so much interesting history and stories and examples to it, and really helping me understand the world a lot better through this podcast. It's a very high quality podcast. It is heavy mental lifting in a way.
And what do you say it's called?
It's called Akimbo. So akimbo.link. And then of course, check out Love Your Work.
For sure. Yeah. Wow, amazing. Okay. And so that's a great recommendation. I'll check it out myself. Now, in general, what tools do you use for your marketing, like in terms of like email marketing, stuff like that? And what is, out of those, maybe one tool that you can recommend to everyone listening and watching that...
I use ActiveCampaign for email. Yeah. I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too.
It just gives you an incredible amount of control. I also like ConvertKit. They're similar in a lot of ways, but they're different in a lot of ways, in that ConvertKit is a lot more simple.
Use them both, though?
I don't use them both, but in doing these evaluations that I'm doing, I do look at ConvertKit and I kind of think like, is it worth switching? But I think I ultimately come to, you know, ActiveCampaign is, it just gives you so much control. Uh-huh. And ConvertKit's great if you can, I don't want to say it's restrictive, because it's actually, you can do quite a bit with it, but it is a little restrictive when you compare it to ActiveCampaign. Uh-huh. And, you know, you're probably better off if you can use ConvertKit and stick with kind of their way of doing things. But I guess I'm a control freak. You know, I'd love to have the control that I can have with ActiveCampaign, where I can kind of make anything and I can make these automations and you know, have so many different lists and all that stuff. So
yeah.
I really do like ActiveCampaign. What else do I use for marketing? Well, I can tell you for selling books, Amazon AMS ads are really interesting. It's definitely like a black box in that it's very difficult to get reliable numbers from it. Yeah. But I see that as an opportunity, because I think that a lot of authors are then not willing to put in the work that it takes to figure out how to make a profit with them. So if that qualifies as a tool, that is something that I like.
Cool. And so basically just the last question, where can we find you online and connect with you?
Check out my podcast, Love Your Work. I've had a lot of great guests. We've talked about some of them. I was just talking about ConvertKit and ActiveCampaign. That reminds me, I do have a very extensive YouTube video where I compare those two. So if people are interested in hearing my own pros and cons between those, cool. I think that's good. And then also, yeah, check out katavi.net. That is my blog. And if you're interested in taking a free course on design, designforhackers.com.
And socials?
Oh, social, of course. Yes. Twitter.
Twitter. Okay.
At Katavi on Twitter. I'm at Katavi on Instagram as well. I don't use Instagram a ton, but I'm on there. And then also, Cadavy Author on Facebook, and also there's a Design for Hackers Facebook page as well.
Awesome. Okay, so I'll link to all of those. And
wow, that's a lot of them.
Yeah, man. So thank you so much for coming on this show. And it was amazing. Like, you're like the first expert that I brought on to Mindful and Ruthless to interview. And you're also...
it's an honor.
Yeah, so it's a total honor and for me, you know, as well. And I can talk to you for like hours, right? Because we we have so much to talk about.
Yeah, it has been fun, yes.
Yeah, so thanks so much, man. And yeah, I'll catch you around probably for another interview in like a year or so, and we'll see where we'll both be.
Yeah, that sounds great. Saggy, thank you so much.
Thanks so much,
it's been
David.
Great being on the show. This has been a fun conversation.
Totally fun. It was great. So thanks so much, man. All right, everyone, and that's a wrap.
We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please consider sharing it with a colleague or a friend that you think would benefit from listening to it.
And if we may ask, one more thing. Please rate us on iTunes. This will help the podcast reach more audience and make us so happy. You only have to do this once, not every episode, and it has tremendous impact.
Thanks a lot, hackers, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Woo-hoo.